First MetroSec is providing this podcast as a general market commentary. Reference to any specific security, product, or entity do not constitute as an offer or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments or to participate in any particular trading strategy. The statements, comments, views, or opinions expressed by the hosts are subject to change without notice, and First MetroSec is under no obligation to update, amend, change, or correct any of the statements, comments, views, or opinions expressed. The statements, comments, views, and opinions expressed by the guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the view of First MetroSec. First MetroSec disclaims any liability arising from reliance on or reference to any information obtained in this podcast.
Podcast Network Asia.
You are listening to First Metro Securities Philippine Stock Market Weekly Podcast, where we feature timely and relevant discussions on the Philippine stock market and the economy in the hope of providing you investing and trading guidance. Here's your host, Royce Aguilar, from the Research Department at First Metro Sec.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of First Metro Securities, a weekly podcast. We have your very important guest. But before I introduce him, let me describe first the company, right? So we have here ASEN. So ASEN is engaged in power generation. So for its power business, to specify, the company manages diversified portfolio power plants with renewable and conventional sources. So the principal product of power generation and supply is the electricity produced and delivered to the end consumer. So it involves the conversion of fuel and other forms of energy to electricity, or the purchase of electricity from power generation companies in the Philippine wholesale electricity spot market. So before I, you know, delve into a bit there, how much capacity they have, I would like to describe first their performance for both 2020 and 9 months 2021. So for the 2020, their net income grew from 58 million last 2019 to 3.75 billion. So that's a huge jump. So the earnings growth was driven by higher revenues and better operating margins. To specify on the revenues, it increased by 27% to 20.4 billion due to higher sales volume from their SLTech's new power supply contract with Meralco, which began, you know, late December 2019, as well as revenues from newly acquired and injected assets. Now, in the 9 months of 2021, their net income further grew, specifically to 4.3 billion. So that's 22% higher compared to 9 months of 2020. So we're seeing demand recovery. There was acquisition of operating projects, newly operational renewable energy projects. So specifically on the revenue side, the revenues increased by 24% year on year to 18.9 billion due to higher attributable output, which increased by 17% year-on-year to 3,378 gigawatts per hour, amid 13% year-on-year growth in renewable output and 20% increase in generation from the Philippine assets. So that's despite the pandemic, you can see the outperformance of this company. So just to delve into a bit into their assets, so this came from their 9 months 2021 presentation. So first, ASEN's Philippine assets, Proforma, so they have a net attributable capacity of 1,530 megawatts, 994 of which are renewables. Now, going to the international assets, Proforma, their net attributable capacity is 1,515 megawatts, and then 100% are renewables. So they're exposed in Vietnam, India, Indonesia, and Australia. Okay, so that's just a gist of who ASEN is. So now let me introduce the guest for this podcast. We have here Mr. John Eric Franchot, President and CEO of ASEN. So let me introduce him for a bit. So he's the President and CEO of ASEN. Under his leadership, Ayala established its energy platform from a standing start in 2011 to become one of the largest renewable energy platforms in Southeast Asia with over 2,000 megawatts of attributable capacity. And I believe as of 9M21, it has increased further. Eric is also a managing director and member of the management committee of Ayala Corporation since 2009 and was appointed as chairman of Ayala's investment committee in 2021. He's also a director of various Ayala Group companies, including AC Infrastructure, AC Health, AC Ventures, and as chairman and CEO of ACE and Exor. Eric earned a master's degree in management studies at the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom graduating with first-class honors, he received his undergraduate degree in humanities and political economy from the University of Asia and the Pacific, graduating magna cum laude. So without further ado, we have here Mr. John Eric Francia. So hi, Eric.
Hi, Royce. How are you? Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for accommodating us and being a guest in this podcast. So let's start. We have a lot of questions for this company. A lot of our clients are asking about you. So I think this is one way to answer all of their questions. So first question, as mentioned in our introduction, in 2020, the sector, their earnings declined by 28% compared to 2019. So of course, we saw power demand and consequently selling prices were negatively affected by the COVID-19 pandemic and community quarantine restrictions. But as mentioned earlier, ASEN's 2020 net income grew from 58 million to 3.7 billion. And then as mentioned in the 9 months of 2021, the company's net income further grew by 20%. And we understand, right, it can be attributed to new contracts, additional revenues. But it's still a huge increase done in a year where there's limited mobility, not only here in the Philippines, but globally. So the question is, how was the company able to get past through the COVID-19 pandemic? What were the measures implemented that led to this earnings outperformance?
Yeah, Royce, as you mentioned, 2020 was an amazing year for us, notwithstanding the pandemic. Number one, as you mentioned, the contracted capacity, the higher degree of contracting helped a lot, because when we acquired and integrated what was then Finmay Energy, it was under-contracted. So we were fortunate enough to win that significant contract from Meralco in late 2019. And that really improved the economics, because that was the best use of power capacity. So that's one key factor in terms of the turnaround. Second, we've been very active in the M&A space. We did quite a bit of acquisitions early in 2020. We acquired some of our partner stakes in wind and solar. So that definitely helped with the economics. And notwithstanding the pandemic, we've always taken a long view, that the country needs capacity. You know, so and that the demand recovery it's just a matter of time. So we did continuous investments in greenfield projects when practically the rest of the world paused. We continued to be aggressive with investments. I wish we were more aggressive, but of course we needed to be calibrated. This is just with the benefit of hindsight. But I'm glad that we have been constantly adding capacity, which helps sustain all that growth. So I think, the last thing I would say is the agility of the portfolio to respond to market dynamics. So for example, when we saw a significant drop in spot price, we were fortunate enough to build up our contracted capacity base, and we were able to somewhat delay or manage our supply that we were able to purchase from a low spot market as well. So the agility in our power portfolio also helped enhance or optimize the economics amidst the difficult period. Now, fast forward to 2021, we are shifting the portfolio because we've seen the demand recover faster than people expected. We're already at pre-COVID levels, number one. And number two, there's also a tightness in supply owing to constraints in Malampaya and owing to the delay of construction of new power plants because of COVID-related delays and some maintenance issues on some power plants. So the industry was surprised about the market in 2021. So again, we are shifting the portfolio. We had some unfortunate situation where our power plant Esseltec was down during high spot price. So that impacted our 2021 figure. But again, we have stepped up our level of aggressiveness in terms of rolling out our renewables project so that by 2022, 2023, we would be prepared with more capacity in anticipation of a tight market. So again, agility is very important in this volatile and uncertain world.
Right. Yeah. So we'll actually talk about the supply issue, not only in the region, but in the whole country. We will talk about it in a while. But the next question is all about the company's fundraising exercise. So to specify to the listeners out there, ASEN was able to raise 5.4 billion via stock rights offering last January 2021. You were able to raise $11.9 billion through a private placement where Aran Investment subscribed to 4 billion primary shares in March 2021. Another is you received approximately $10 billion in proceeds via an FOO last May. And then I think this is somewhat new. Yeah, your subsidiary, Aysen Finance Limited, issued this $400 million undated fixed for life green bonds last September. This is listed on the Singapore's exchange SGXST platform. So I think the question here is, does the company have any other fundraising exercise in the short term? Or perhaps do you have something in mind in the coming years?
Well, we've done a lot of fundraising this year, as you very well mentioned, Royce, that totals around 27 billion pesos of equity raising now from the SRO, the follow-on offering, plus the proceeds from GIC's private placement earlier this year. And then on top of that, as you mentioned, we raised $400 million, which is our debut in the debt capital markets. So we have close to $1 billion in terms of cash in our balance sheet. And we are quite busy deploying that cash. So we have a lot of projects both in the Philippines and around the region. We can discuss that further later. But for now, we do have significant cash in our balance sheet. But of course, as we deploy these investments, then we'll be looking to grow our capital base. But for now, we have enough, certainly for the year. It may take 12 months or so to deploy all that cash before we think of fundraising. But who knows, right? Our business development is very active, not only in terms of greenfield projects, but also active in the M&A space. And you'll just never know. If we land a significant project, then that may call for more fundraising. We do have a lot of room in our balance sheet. Our leverage ratio, our gearing ratio is only at 0.35 to 1. So we have a lot of room to increase leverage in our balance sheet if we needed to fund our expansion.
Great. Yeah. So yeah, because of your fundraising exercise, I think you were able to take advantage of the expanding despite the quarantine restrictions. And now currently you are one of the fastest growing renewable energy company, not only in the country but in Southeast Asia. And like you said, the company was able to raise close to $1 billion in fresh capital. How does the company plan to grow further on the local and global front? Do you have any specific targets, strategies already set in place that you can share to our listeners?
Yeah, well, we have a current aspiration or goal of reaching 5,000 megawatts of renewable capacity by 2025. We determined that goal in early 2018 when our renewable capacity was at 250 megawatts. So the team at First Stuff fell off their seat when I proposed growing 20-fold in 7 years or so to 5,000 megawatts by 2025. And lo and behold, we're now at the halfway mark. We are now approximately 2,500 megawatts of renewables attributable across our portfolio. Halfway there with 4 years to go, suddenly it doesn't sound too aspirational for me any longer. So I would say that in the next 6, 12, or 18 months, I would start looking at 2030 and start determining our new, big, hairy, and audacious goal. We don't have the number yet. I will try to get the buy-in from the senior management team as well as our board in the next year or so. But that is something that I would love to communicate once that is firmed up. But for now, we're sticking to the 5,000 megawatt renewable goal 2025. We wouldn't adjust that goal. I believe that we will surpass that. And then in the next 6, 12, 18 months, we'll most likely announce and put a stake on the ground and talk about our 2030 aspirations. So it's going to be exciting, but we're already gearing up our platform to really play a leading role in this energy transition.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Needless to say, the company has really progressed fast the past years. Now, given the recent strategic acquisition, do you have any specific target, or how does the company see the split in earnings between domestic and international business moving forward? Because it seems like your international business is growing significantly at a fast rate. So how do you see the split in earnings moving forward? Do you have a goal in mind?
Yeah, we don't have a goal per se, Royce, but if you look at our snapshot, we're now around 3,000 megawatts of attributable capacity, 2,500 of that is renewables. Now, out of the 3,000 are split is almost exactly 50-50 between Philippines and international. We have around 1,500 megawatts of attributable each in the Philippines and our international business. Philippines is a high growth market given the expected demand recovery and given the emphasis on renewable energy. The government has set 35% target renewable output share by 2030. Happy to discuss the industry outlook in a bit. But we do believe that we need to build, as a country, we need to build anywhere between 15 to 20,000 megawatts of renewables on or before 2030. And we will want to play a leading role in that renewable build out. So Philippines, while it's a single market, will still remain as our core market. It will be approximately 40-50% of our business in the next decade or so. But of course, there's a much bigger market outside of the Philippines. We're quite big in Vietnam and Australia, and those markets are very promising as well. You've got Indonesia, which is also renewable boom waiting to happen, dependent on the future government policies. And of course, India is one of the largest renewable markets in the world, just after China and the US. So we expect significant growth beyond the Philippines as well. So I would say that from a 50% share of our business now, international is likely going to grow that share. No particular target, but I would say that international will probably account for between 50 to 60% over the next decade or so. But Philippines will not fall behind given our commitments in the country. So I would say 40 to 50% would be my best estimate of where Philippines will end up in the next 5-10 years.
Great. Okay, thank you for that. So moving on to the regulatory space, I'd just like to read this news first. So last October 2020, the Department of Energy declared this moratorium on new coal power plant projects while allowing foreign investors to fully own geothermal plant projects in the country. So Secretary Cusi thinks that this would help build a more sustainable power system that will be resilient in the face of structural changes in demand. I would like to ask your view regarding how ASEAN will position ahead of those new regulations, specifically, you know, the allowing of foreign investors to fully own geothermal plant projects. And besides that, in terms of regulatory outside Philippines, how are you evaluating that, or how are you preparing for those, or what are you seeing in general?
Yeah, I think in terms of allowing foreign investors to own, lift those restrictions of ownership, I think it's a good thing for the country. We welcome that. Open competition is good as long as the playing field is level. I think it's not an easy market. It's highly competitive, and it takes a while to build up the pipeline of projects in the renewables space. No? So I'd like to believe that being an early mover in this space, we really ramped up our renewables build out as far back as 5 years ago. I think we've got a head start. You know, I think for more companies to invest in the Philippines, lift the restrictions, I think that's something that would be helpful for the industry as well. I mean, look, as I mentioned, we need to build 15 to 20,000 megawatts of renewables over the next decade or so. We can't do that by ourselves. I think if the more investors there are, the better for us as an industry and as a country to really reach our sustainability goals. In terms of the regulatory regime outside of the Philippines, Royce, it varies. And one of the reasons why we like to expand geographically is to diversify our risks. Each market has its own unique risk profile and regulatory framework. One of the advantages, for example, of having a balanced and diversified portfolio is you can optimize. So, for example, we love being in Indonesia and Vietnam, and to a certain extent in India, because the market, by definition, is hinged on long-term power purchase agreements. There's no spot market in these markets, so there's not really much market risk that we're taking. And Vietnam and Indonesia are linked to the dollar, so it's like the good old NAPOCOR days or pre-Epira, where contracts were usually pegged to the US dollar, and that's changed over time in a market like the Philippines. So we have that cover in these other markets. Then the disadvantage of those markets is that you are reliant on government action or policy. If government doesn't trigger procurement, then you're just waiting on the sidelines On the other hand, open markets, open and competitive markets like Philippines and Australia are also attractive because you are not reliant on government action. You look at the supply-demand dynamics and you make your decisions based on that. And that's what we're doing in Philippines and Australia, where we are seeing a potential shortage in the medium-term horizon, say in the next 2, 3, 4 years. And the ability to diversify and have long-term contracts, a lot of them dollarized in markets, as I mentioned earlier, allows us to take a bolder position in countries like Philippines and Australia. So I think that's one advantage of having a diversification, not only in terms of diversifying your regulatory policy risk, but also diversifying your market and contracting risk as well as your foreign currency risk.
Great. Thank you. For the next question, I'd like to scale a bit back and look at, you know, the bigger general scale in terms of renewables, because a lot of our clients, or not necessarily only our clients, but a lot of companies, other companies in the Philippines may also think that, you know, coal is still needed in the country. So I think my next question is, will renewables be able to compete with baseload coal and gas plants?
Yeah, I think it's going to take time because of the scale that's required for renewables to deliver the gigawatt hours or the output, as well as the competitiveness of battery storage. So obviously, solar and wind have already come down in price, and one can argue that it's already cheaper than fossil fuel, be it coal or gas. But you need to take into consideration the reliability or dispatchability of these renewable plants. So it's an incomplete picture to say that renewable is already cheaper than fossil fuel. If you build in the dispatchability or reliability, it's not cheaper yet. You need battery storage to come down in price for you to make that statement. So we're not there yet, but hopefully in the next 3, 5, 7 years, it really depends on how fast storage will scale up and become economically competitive. Based on our estimation, well, today, battery storage on a 4 to 6 hour system, which may be good to get renewables to participate in what we call the mid-merit or a 12-hour market, you know, supplying from, let's say, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., which is sort of the peak period. The cost of storage today on a 4 to 6 hour storage system is about $250,000 per megawatt hour. We need that number to come down to at least by 50% to less than $125,000 per megawatt hour, so that the cost of renewables, be it solar or wind, bundled with energy storage, will be able to compete already for that mid-merit or that 12-hour market during the day. And it will be competing effectively relative to gas and coal. Now, if you want that to be 24 hours, then you'll need to add more storage and more renewables. I think we're ways to go. You may need that storage number to go below $100,000 per megawatt hour for it to be economically viable. So I think it's baby steps. That's why we've always maintained that in this energy transition, it cannot happen overnight. While we are big proponents of renewables, we still think that transition fuel and technology like gas will be needed to help us bridge that gap, because we still have a growing demand base and we will need baseload capacity, and renewables and storage will not be able to address that need in the next 5 years or so. Maybe in the next decade or so, that will be a possibility. But in the meantime, we need to bridge that with fossil fuel. There is already a coal moratorium in the Philippines, Indonesia, and other markets, and it's hard to finance coal these days. There's been a global movement away from coal financing, and insurance costs are also increasing. So I think the next best thing really to make the transition happen is investments in gas, as a ideal transition of fuel. So yeah, but over time, hopefully, as we accelerate the scaling up of renewables and battery storage, hopefully we will be less reliant on fossil fuel, including gas, But it will take more than a decade, I believe, before we can obsolete the need for fossil fuel.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned energy storage, battery storage in the previous question. So given the gradual global shift to renewable energy, energy storage plays an important role in this balancing act and helps to create this more flexible and reliable grid system. And actually, in some of your interviews, you highlighted the importance of battery storage in allowing for the expansion of renewables in the country. So can you elaborate a bit on some of ASEN's battery storage projects?
Yeah. So, for example, Royce, the need for battery storage is really because renewables can only grow so much without battery storage because there are grid limitations, right? So, for example, in one of the geographies in our Zambales, one of our Zambales projects, where we have a 63 megawatt project, we sized it because there are grid limitations. The grid can only take 63 megawatts, or in AC terms, only 50 megawatts, right? So even if we had the potential to develop 200, 300, or even 500 megawatts of project. Now, the way to resolve that, if the grid won't be upgraded in that part of the country, then once battery storage becomes economical, we can incorporate battery storage, right, and expand the plant from 63 megawatts to 200 or 300 so that during the day, when the solar farm is producing 200 megawatts, but the grid can only take 50 or 60 megawatts, then we can store it first in the battery and then release it at night. No, so that is the importance of battery storage. It unlocks the potential of renewables. Otherwise, you will be limited by the grid. No, so on our battery storage projects, we have a first one, which is in Alaminos, Laguna. It's integrated with our 120 megawatt solar farm. So on top of our solar farm, we do have a 40 megawatt hour battery storage project. It's scheduled. We're ready already. We're just waiting for the final tick the box or permitting from the various agencies. But we're ready to import the electricity already. We designed it with a potential supply to NGCP as an ancillary service in mind, because it's economical, feasible for batteries if it supplies ancillary service to the grid. For example, frequency regulation to balance the grid frequency. So it's already competitive relative to other technologies. However, if we use it for what we call the time shifting or load shifting, which is what I described earlier in my Zambales example, where we use battery to store for evening use, it's not economical yet, right? It's only economical for frequency regulation or grid services, but not economical yet if you use it for time shifting. The economics are different. So, but yeah, we're excited to have our first battery storage project in our portfolio in Alaminos, Laguna. That's not going to be the last, certainly. We just won the support of the U.S. government in Vietnam, almost $3 million of grant to build a 15 megawatt hour battery storage project, a pilot project in Vietnam. Hopefully, it will be a great demonstration project. We're going to incorporate it in one of our solar plants. We are also waiting for development approvals for our significant battery storage projects in Australia as well. So it's already happening. In Australia, battery storage is more feasible than in a market like Philippines. And the reason for this, Royce, is in Australia, they have a much higher cap in terms of the price cap. Now, it's I think it's 20 times higher than our cap. In the Philippines, you can only sell at a cap of 32 pesos per kilowatt hour. In Australia, you can sell for, 600 or 700 pesos per kilowatt hour equivalent. So as you can imagine, a battery can also be used for arbitrage to address the imbalances in the system. So the more variable or volatile the price is, the better for batteries. So in Australia, the prices are volatile because of the very high cap, and it encourages the investments of battery storage. In the Philippines, it will take a longer time battery storage will have to come down significantly in price because of our tight regulatory caps here in the Philippines. No? So one idea, if the government wants to encourage the incorporation of battery technology in the Philippines to help enable all of these renewable projects and not wait for battery prices to come down significantly at significantly low levels, is to have a different cap, for example, for battery projects. That is one idea that we could put forward to the regulators if they're open, because it will encourage more investments in battery storage, which can only bode well for renewable investments as well.
Right. Yeah. So I think you've elaborated on the importance of battery storage and also your projects, not only here in the Philippines, but in other countries, right? And I think this question not only concerns investors, but actually, you know, the households in the coming years. And I think my next question is regarding, what's your outlook for the supply in the Philippine power sector in the coming years? Because I think in terms of demand, I think it's pretty hinged on quarantine measures, right, in the coming years. But I think the main issue here is the supply. But I would like to ask your outlook for the supply in the country's power sector. So go ahead.
Yeah, I think it could get quite tight in the next 2 to 4 years, 2022, 23, 24. But it really depends on several factors, Royce. This is like crystal balling. No. Number one, what would be the demand trajectory, right? My own personal crystal ball says that it will rebound significantly. We've already seen that this year. And imagine once the economy reopens, it's already starting to reopen. I can only imagine the strong rebound in electricity as well. So that's going to play a significant factor. And number two, of course, you need to look at the supply side. What are the factors, variables to look at? Well, number one, it's malampaya, right? The rate of decline and the ability of the system to incorporate LNG, right? How fast will the various players incorporate LNG and diversify our source of energy. So that's one factor. The second is the construction of existing plants. Are they going to be on time or delayed? We've got around close to 4,000 megawatts of thermal plants being constructed. We have GN Dinginin, that's over 1,300 megawatts. San Miguel is also building, I believe, close to 2,400 megawatts of coal and gas plants across their portfolio. So those are the so-called committed projects. So to the extent that these projects are executed in the next 3 to 4 years, that will help alleviate the situation. Any delay would obviously result in a tighter supply situation. So anything can happen. And then the other factor is the incorporation of renewables. The good thing about renewables is that once your project is shovel-ready for construction, it only takes 12 to 18 months to build that capacity. So hopefully we can accelerate a lot of these projects. We've been very aggressive with our own portfolio. We've announced some big projects already, and we will not stop. We expect to get more projects constructed over the next year or so. So I think it also depends on the pace of rollout of renewables in the system. And of course, let's not forget the grid upgrade, because all of this additional generation capacity will not be as effective if the grid is not upgraded. There is already constraints across the system. I know NGCP is working hard. It's not easy to secure all of those right-of-ways and so forth, but that's also a huge factor. Part of this is also the Mindanao-Visayas connection. I think to alleviate any potential shortage in the next couple of years, we also look forward to the interconnectivity between Mindanao and Visayas. NGCP, I believe, is targeting next year as the completion of the interconnection. Mindanao has an oversupply situation right now. We would love for that oversupply to be used to power Luzon and Visayas, but that's only possible once you get that interconnection done. So that would enable 400 megawatts of supply from Mindanao going into Visayas and to Luzon as well. So those are the factors, Royce. It's hard to say. It could go either way. But any one of these variables or a combination will result in either high prices or low prices. It's anybody's guess, but hopefully it gives you a flavor of how electricity markets will work in the next 3 to 4 years.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Eric Francho, for answering all our questions. Do you have anything to say to all ASEAN investors out there, as well as those planning to invest into the company for the long term?
Well, yeah, you said it right, Royce. This is a long-term commitment for us. We've created ASEAN as a platform to lead the charge in the energy transition, in the renewables revolution. We believe that energy transition is really a multi-decade phenomenon. We are in the midst of this mega trend, which is underpinned by energy transition, transitioning from fossil fuel to renewables. We do expect this trend to happen in multiple decades and will result in over 20% compounded growth as a sector in terms of renewables growing. And that's where ASEAN is playing a leading role in this part of the world, at least. And we also have aspirations of growing our regional geographic footprint. While Philippines will remain as a core market for us, we are not shy in terms of spreading our wings and participating in the regional and perhaps even global markets. So there's a lot of work to do amidst this energy transition, and it's an exciting times ahead of us. We've got a lot of momentum, and yeah, thanks for all the support. We've been getting tremendous support from a lot of our stakeholders, including our investors, especially the ESG and sustainability oriented investors. So we'll keep on rising up to the challenge, and again, we welcome all this opportunity. Thanks a lot, Teresa, for this opportunity to share our thoughts with your listeners.
Thank you.
I'm also an avid listener, by the way. I go every weekend, and you know, I put on my AirPods and listen to a lot of podcasts. And this is one of you know, I listen to your monthly updates at least. No? So just bear in mind that I'm listening whenever you do these podcasts.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Eric Francia. So of course, it's a good thing that we have here a president CEO explaining to our listeners their plans and why they did outperform in the past years and what we should look forward for the company, especially right now. They're a company that has been newly part of the PSEI, now part of the MSCI also, MSCI Standard Cap. So again, so thank you, Mr. Eric Francia. And this has been Royce Aguilar, host and equity research analyst of First Metro Securities. So thank you.
Thanks, Royce. That was great.
And as always with First Metro Securities, it's hashtag your future first. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to First Metro Securities Philippine Stock Market Weekly Podcast. Don't forget to follow us to get first dibs on our new episodes. For more up-to-date market news and info, exclusive content, and the opportunity to connect with your fellow Filipino investors and traders, join facebook.com/groups/FirstMetroSec and be part of the First Metro Sec family.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.